This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We got a big show for you today. We're excited to talk a little NBA, a lot of baseball, early baseball games starting up soon. We've got win totals we're going to crush today. You're talking about that in the win totals market. Alex Baruth is going to join us to get his favorite offseason reactions to the NBA offseason and summer league. And then we'll talk about today's MLB slate and our best bets there as well. Nick Whalen, let's start off with a little Joker talk here. And I'm not talking tennis, although he's playing right now, but Nikola Jokic doing some finance talk here, delaying any sort of extension talks. Your reaction to this?
It's not shocking to me. I think it's emblematic, you know, perhaps of where we are in the NBA calendar that this, you know, registers as perhaps the biggest news of the day. But we got to keep in mind, Nikola Jokic is under contract on a max deal for next season. He's under contract at almost $60 million the season after. And he has a player option for $63 million in 2027-2028. So I think the headline here, of course, is like Nikola Jokic won't sign extension. It's not like this is going to be, you know, an issue that is in the immediate future for the Denver Nuggets. Now, you know, it doesn't shock me given the type of personality that Nikola Jokic is. He doesn't strike me as the type of guy who feels like he's going to play in the NBA until he's like 41 years old, right? I think he's a guy who clearly has other interests. And, you know, I think the way that the Denver Nuggets have operated, especially these last couple of years, if you're Jokic, I think you want to see how these next couple of seasons play out before you officially commit to this franchise for 3, 4, 5 more years beyond your current contract. So it sounds like these negotiations will likely pick up in earnest next summer, but not a ton of urgency right now if you're the Denver Nuggets. But as we've talked about, Jeff, I love what Denver did this offseason. They cleaned house, they fired their head coach, they fired their GM at the end of the regular season. They feel like they're back on track. They just officially announced the Bruce Brown signing. I think he's worth more to them than he is any other NBA team. I absolutely loved the decision to send out Michael Porter to get some flexibility to bring back, in my opinion, a better replacement in Cam Johnson. And look, as I've said on the show a few times over the last couple of weeks, if I'm betting anybody other than OKC to win the West, to win the title this season, it's going to be Denver.
Yep. I agree with you. I love the trade they made, mostly from listening to you and Alex talk it up there. So, but I like what they've done. And plus, they're Denver. They gave OKC all they could handle already last year there. Went to a game 7. So that makes a whole lot of sense there. We've got two baseball games about to start up at 11:10 West Coast time, 1:10 your time. We got Dodgers-Brewers. And I say your time because it is Brewers. Red hot Brewers taking the first two games from the Dodgers there. This one, it's Tyler Glasnow coming off the IL versus Jose Quintana, also known as the Logan Henderson blocker to me, but not that I'm bitter about that in my fantasy leagues. This line has moved. It was originally opened at Dodgers minus 163. It's now minus 150.
I believe this is the third game in a row now in this series where the Dodgers are going to close as favorites. Obviously, like you said, Milwaukee's taken the first two. 9-1 win on Monday, snuck out a 3-1 win behind a huge effort from Jacob Mizorowski last night. And look, I kind of like Milwaukee's chances to complete this sweep, right? We've talked about this team as one that, you know, when you think Milwaukee Brewers, you think, you know, beating up on the bad teams, doing okay against the middle tier, and then always coming up short against the big dogs. And that's been the case in the postseason, but the Brewers have been one of the best teams in baseball in terms of facing opponents over 500, especially getting this series at home. I think is huge. Got a total sitting at 8.5 tonight. Not quite the pitching matchup, you know, that we had last night. Clayton Kershaw, you know, the old vet going up against the new generation in Jacob Mizorowski. But my question to you, Jeff, when you evaluate this game is, what do we see from Tyler Glasnow, right? I mean, a guy who hasn't pitched since late April, how deep does he go? You know, how much do we see that LA Dodgers bullpen?
That's a great question. A heavily worked Dodgers bullpen, at least Clayton Kershaw went 6 yesterday, but keep in mind Yamamoto didn't get out of the first inning in the previous start. So that's a pretty huge component of that one there. You know, I think it's noteworthy that you're not going to see a whole lot of lines in terms of how many innings, how many outs that Glasnow records, but I expect that they also brought up, I think they activated Landon Knack today too, to be like the long guy, and under the assumption that Glasnow probably won't go that deep, a pitcher that doesn't go that deep to begin with there. By the way, the over under on strikeouts for Glasnow is 5.5. That also indicates it's going to be a pretty low, pretty relatively short outing from him. I'm not big on the Jose Quintana train. And it's not just my bitterness from fantasy of blocking Logan Henderson. I just don't think that Quintana is necessarily on a roll right now. In his benefit there, he is facing a Dodgers team that doesn't have a lot of their regular starters. You look at it there. Tommy Edman is back today, but Teoscar Hernandez, who would be ideal against Quintana, right-handed slugger against Quintana, not in the lineup today. Still, he's missed every game of this series so far. Muncy on the IL, another big right-handed hitter, at least righty, you know, a lefty killer, Kike Hernandez, also on the IL. So they're starting Miguel Rojas at third. Estuary Ruiz is in left field. James Outman is in center. They're down a few key parts in this lineup. It's still 1-5 is tough. Otani, Betts, Smith, Freeman, Páez. But it we'll see about Edman. Edman's actually been pretty good. Getting him back lengthens this lineup a little bit, at least.
How seriously are you taking this Milwaukee team right now, Jeff? They're +250 to win the NL Central. 2.5 back of the Cubs right now, currently occupying that second wild card spot in the NL. 14-1 to win the National League. Are they a serious contender, or are we going down that same road once again, where the Brewers go on this midseason hot streak? They probably end up getting the wild card, and then they end up, you know, being overmatched either in that wild card series or in the divisional.
See, I take them very seriously against the Cubs in the NL Central. I think they're very live there. I like they're getting plus money for that. They have a good history of closing out strong. They also have a history of losing that in the playoffs, and that's where I don't take them so seriously to win the league, because I still think, yes, they're beating up on the Dodgers this week, but a full strength Dodgers team, a full strength Phillies team, full strength Mets team, I still have issues with. I still think there's a problem with that, getting past those teams, making that extended run through the playoffs. I'd like to see them add another bat, like to see them add another key reliever. I think the latter is less important. I think they do need to add another bat, and I don't have a whole lot of trust and faith that they will do so. And so that's the reason why I'm probably not too sanguine on their playoff prospects. One other day game, Toronto and the White Sox. Toronto now, Nick, they are a wagon. They have won 10 in a row, 7-1 over the White Sox yesterday in a shortened game. Pretty good favorite again in this one here. It's Eric Lauer versus Adrian Hauser. Hauser actually pitching pretty well, but so is Lauer. Lauer pitched very well against the Angels last time out. Hauser is rolling ever since they acquired him. He's actually, you know, sub-2 ERA. It's not something you expect to see, but this is also why the White Sox have actually have a better ERA than the Dodgers, better ERA than the Blue Jays, believe it or not, as a team.
Yeah, this is not one of those pitching matchups when you're scanning through the schedule and you're like, oh man, got to clear the books to make sure I could watch Eric Lauer go up against Adrian Hauser. But I think both of these guys have been significantly better than their reputation would imply. Like you said, Toronto's been the hottest team in baseball, 10 in a row. They've now built up a 3.5 game lead in the AL East. And, you know, I think the strength of this pitching matchup is the reason we have a low total in this one. I mean, Hauser, two straight excellent starts for him. He's got a 1.6 ERA through his last eight starts. He's pitched just over 50 innings in that span. So, you know, the Blue Jays are one of those teams where I continue to look up and just wonder, like, how exactly are they doing this, right? It's a team that does really well getting on base. They don't really strike out, but there's not a ton of power there. You know, the pitching has been just fine. And I think the market is still kind of doubting this team, Jeff. Like we said, they've won 10 in a row. They're leading the division by a full series. They're still behind the Yankees. If you look at the AL East odds right now, the Yankees are plus 100. That's about as high as those odds have been all year. But Toronto's still plus 120.
Yeah, and it just shows a lack of faith. I think that's misplaced, though, because I think the Blue Jays are in it to win it. I mean, they showed that by extending Vlad. I think they will be buyers at the trade deadline. This is a team, I think we shouldn't look at them as like a finished product, but a team that's on the rise, a team that will be getting Anthony Santander back. He's done nothing for this team. He was their big free agent signing. He's been a negative player so far, and I don't think that will happen in the second half when he returns. I actually like their chances at this price. I think that's a pretty good price. I think it's go where the puck is moving, not where it's been. And I think this is a team that is going to be a better team in terms of personnel, at least. Maybe not, obviously not performance. They've been rolling so far. That's not going to continue. But anyways, another quick baseball note. Ronald Acuna Jr., late scratch last night with lower back tightness. he was given a day off for rest on Sunday and an early game too. So they had, it was the Roku game on Sunday where they play 2 hours earlier than everybody else. Had a day off on Monday, still was a late scratch. I know there are some not even trade rumors, but team, like ESPN did a thing, a hypothetical trades for Ronald Acuña Jr. Like, let's see if that we can make this happen. I think that'd be crazy for them to do that there. But, and I think one of the teams was the Brewers, and you and I both laughed that off as a possibility because we know that's just not how the Brewers operate. But it's just enough to raise a little flag there. Either A, the back is worse than we thought and was something on Sunday, they didn't disclose it, or B, maybe they're playing around, maybe thinking about a trade here.
I think Twitter would lead you to believe that they're thinking about a trade. I don't know how realistic that ultimately will be. Braves are out on the West Coast right now. They play at the A's later tonight. So it won't be, you know, for several more hours that we'll probably get an update as to whether Acuña is in the lineup tonight. I mean, you mentioned the Brewers, man. They absolutely have the firepower. They have the farm system to get it done if they want. That would be the most anti-Brewers move possible. And one that even as a Brewers fan, it's like, you have the possibility of getting Ronald Acuña, but giving up, you know, multiple promising prospects, it's easier said than done.
Yep, indeed. Hey, guess what? RotoWire, we've got a brand new look, even better fantasy football draft tools for the 2025 season. Whether you're using our draft assistant to get real-time insights, customizing your strategy with the draft plan creator, or our powerful draft simulator, RotoWire gives you everything you need to draft with confidence. And right now, VSiN followers get an exclusive offer. Head to rotowire.com and the promo code VSiN at checkout. Get 15% off any RotoWire product. That's rotowire.com, promo code VSIN. Win totals coming up next in the NFL. This is Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen from RotoWire. So check us out at promo code VSiN over at RotoWire. Check out our brand new look. We're going to talk a little win totals right now. And before we start diving into the teams, Nick, I think there's a couple ways we like to approach this. One is schedule. But two, for me, it's just the personnel. That's what I look at more. Mm-hmm. I look at the strength of the team more than the schedule. I think schedule matters. Don't get me wrong. But I think so many times we bake in certain assumptions about the schedule, about the strengths and weaknesses of their opponents. And they're not necessarily true, especially if you use just like some generic strength of schedule rater. Necessarily, it's always kind of backwards looking is the way I look at that there. So that's why I try to, you know, I look at individual games. I've cited the Giants schedule before, and we will here in this segment too. But I look at the personnel and what they've done on the team more than I look at anything else. How about you?
No, I just go off vibes, just pure vibes. No, of course, you're right. It's a mix of the schedule. It's a mix of the personnel. It's a mix of the kind of trust that you have in the organization to maximize that personnel. And, you know, I think it's important to consider that circumstances will change. There will be a handful of quarterbacks who are injured throughout the season. You know, I think if you had looked at the schedule coming into last year and said, okay, we got Packers, 49ers, I don't know, that was like week 12 or something like that, you would not have said, okay, yeah, it's probably going to be Brandon Allen starting on the road at Lambeau Field, right? So there are always circumstances like that, these games that feel like an easy win and then they're actually not. But strength of schedule to me does matter. It's just, to me, you have to look at the right strength of schedule. I like to look at one that is forecasted, you know, based off of win totals as opposed to just how did this team do last season. To me, that's probably going to give you more misinformation than anything else if you're just basing it off of last year. We know the stat. There's basically 50% turnover in terms of NFL playoff teams year over year. So there's no perfect way to go about it. I would say don't go too happy with the overs, right? In general, you know, the numbers or the data says that you're probably better off, you know, taking more unders, at least mixing some of those in. I know this time of year, especially, it's really tempting to just have optimism about 90% of the NFL, but you got to remember that there will be pitfalls. There will be injuries that end up impacting things. I'm curious though, Jeff, I know you and I each have a list of win totals that we like, some that we've bet already, some that we haven't. You're a hater on a couple teams in the NFC West. We've talked about the Arizona Cardinals. We know you like the under on Arizona. That number's even down from when it initially opened at 8.5. But Seattle, I know this is another team that you're skeptical of.
Yeah, I don't. And to be clear, like the Cardinals, like I'm starting to dislike the price. But Seattle, I think, just had a horrible offseason. And I think maybe it was necessary. Maybe this was kind of a cleaning out the remainder of the Pete Carroll era, if you will, but swapping out Geno Smith for Sam Darnold, I'm not buying that necessarily. I don't think the offensive line is very good. I know they tried to address it a little bit there with what they did in the draft. I like the guard they drafted, for instance, there. And Zabel, I think he's solid. Is that enough? This was a team that gave up a lot of pressures last year, and we know what happens to Sam Darnold under pressure. I think Geno Smith was more capable of avoiding that pressure and turning something out of it. They traded away DK Metcalf. They added Cooper Kupp. They added Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Okay, go run some deep outs. I mean, I'd like MVS on Arizona. It would be nice for him to do that, to take that duty away from Marvin Harrison Jr., but I don't know, Nick. I don't really love what they did. I don't think the schedule's not bad. I mean, they got a third place schedule, that, like, for instance, and they play the AFC South in the crossover plus the Steelers. Although I don't think the Steelers are certainly easy by any means, but it's not like they're facing the Ravens. So they've got that going for them. That's an early game at Pittsburgh. You know, we'll see pretty quickly how good that pass blocking is. They start off Niners at the Steelers for those first two. So they also get to face all the NFC South teams, which means they do get a Saints game at home. That's nice. But I don't really love what they did. I think they made themselves worse, not stronger. So I like going under on the 8.5. The only thing I don't like is the price on that one there, that it's -140. So the betting public agrees. They like fading that 8.5 as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like in terms of the out-of-division schedule for Seattle. Seahawks did go 4-2 in division last year. It's hard for me to see four wins for them in the NFC West this year. You know, obviously, one of those games, you caught San Francisco when they were battered. You know, they had a win over the Rams in Week 18 when I think the Rams were resting starters. So some things went their way. You know, to me, that could easily flip. They could be a 2-4 team in division this year. So I'm with you. I mean, it comes down to Sam Darnold, right? If Sam Darnold is closer to the guy that he was for the first 15 games of last season, then this probably is a 9 or 10 win team. If you think there is some regression there, then there's nowhere to look but under.
Yep. One team we both agree on, and I'll let you lay the case because you've been doing a good job of laying it already, is the Falcons over 7.5.
Yeah, I think this is just a really low number, and I believe it's at -140. So, you know, you're eating a little bit of juice here. But there are other ways, I think, to bet the Falcons. If you like them over 7.5, you know, you could bet them to finish second in the division. You could bet them to make the playoffs at +155. I've even been toying around with the idea of the Falcons to win the NFC South, which is around +250. I'm really high on this team. I really want to be careful to not overrate those last 2 weeks with Michael Penix. They lost both of those games for what it's worth. But to me, the offense looked like I think we thought the Falcons offense was supposed to look with Kirk Cousins, right? And you know, you kind of forget that by midseason, I think the Falcons just had to go into a shell, right? They just had to overcompensate for the limitations of Kirk Cousins. And we didn't really get to see a fully unleashed Bijan Robinson. We didn't get to see a fully unleashed Drake London because they were just in this ball control, play not to lose, limited quarterback type of mantra. And look, we've only seen two starts from Penix. It's not a guarantee that he just hits the ground running this season, but comes in as an experienced quarterback. He's the type of guy I think that will translate really well to the NFL level over the course of a full season. And you know, part of this is I'm just a little bit skeptical of Tampa Bay. I mean, Mike Evans is a year older. Chris Godwin is coming off of an injury. Of course, you lose Liam Cohen to Jacksonville. So I think there's a little bit of a step back potentially coming for Tampa Bay. And if there's an opportunity in that division, I think Atlanta's the team that has the talent and made the additions defensively, right? We'll see if they actually work, but they put effort into becoming not the worst pass rush in the NFL next season. I think if those defensive additions really hit, I mean, this could be a 9, 10, maybe even 11 win team.
And they get that head-to-head with the Bucs in Week 1 at home with no Tristan Wirfs all of a sudden now. And I think that hasn't changed the market. The Bucs remain at 9.5. The juice remains the same. I just checked, at least at the DraftKings Sportsbook, it still remains -105 to the over, -115 to the under as far as that goes. I think this is at least a one-win move for them. You know, Tristan Wirfs is elite among left tackles. Losing him for at least 4 games, and I know they haven't officially moved him there, but the reporting is he's definitely going on the PUP list to start the year, missing 4 games. You know, the Bucs, they play Week 2 at Houston, a very good pass rush. They play Week 4 against the Eagles at home, another very good pass rush. I think that lessens their chances of winning those games. I could see them starting off 1-3, Nick. And, you know, I think that, you know, I think that puts a little dent there on the Bucks' hopes there. So I think ties into the liking the Falcons. And I also would probably fade the Bucks now at 9.5. Let's talk about another one of yours, the Browns under 5.5. You have to go pretty low to get under 5.5. You're still going there.
I am. You know, look, I have a lot of respect for Kevin Stefanski. He's a 2-time coach of the year for a reason. I just don't really know where 3 more wins are coming for this Browns team. They do not have a friendly schedule, despite being a 3-win team last season. They have really bad luck in terms of the out-of-division games. Obviously, you play in a really tough division. They could easily go 1-5, 0-6 even in the AFC North. So I will say they have an opportunity, Jeff, week one, catching the Cincinnati Bengals, who never win games in week one. So maybe that'll be important to try to log one early. But there are very few soft spots in the schedule. Like there's no game that you circle and say, oh, that's an automatic win, because they're the Cleveland Browns, right? Even when you're playing another bad team, and there's only 3 or 4 of those to me around the NFL, those are toss-ups at best. So, you know, you look at the pieces that they brought in. Like, I really like Quinshon Judkins, but is a rookie running back going to move the needle? Is that guy alone going to grant you 2 or 3 more wins? You know, you bring in a defensive lineman, Mason Graham, you know, at the top of the draft, a nice future piece, a guy who's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start in terms of rookie minicamp. So I think it's a team with a terrible quarterback room. We'll probably see 2 or 3 different starters. This defense is not quite as good as it was 2 or 3 years ago. And factoring in that schedule, Jeff, I think this is another 3-4 win season for Cleveland. I'm surprised that number's not 4.5, honestly.
Yeah. Not sure if you could hear it, but the dog pound in the background, I didn't like that analysis. Though I totally agree with you on that one there. If you're serious about this sort of talk or any other winning football this season, the VSiN NFL Betting Guide is your first real edge, and it's available now. It's packed with in-depth previews of all 32 teams, season win total breakdowns, best bets from trusted VSiN experts, player props, and betting projections. Everything you need to bet smarter all season long. Lock in our football special for just $175 and get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl, including every betting guide, daily best bet emails, 24/7 video, and all the data and tools on VSiN.com. This early bird pricing expires July 31st, so don't wait. Sign up today and get your copy of the NFL Season Betting Guide at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We'll have plenty more time to talk win totals over the course of the preseason there. Love this topic. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. I could do each team if we wanted to and just do like a 3-hour podcast. But we're not allowed to do that. Instead, we're going to talk hoops with Alex Berutha on the Progressive Guest Line. Coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson with you, rolling along on this Wednesday afternoon. Just a reminder, coming up next week, it'll be VSiN Training Camp Week, Monday through Friday. We'll be with you at a new time slot, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern, talking all football for 2 hours all through the week. We'll talk college football, we'll talk NFL, hit on all the futures markets, talk a little fantasy as well. So make sure you join us, VSiN Training Camp Week, myself, Jeff Erickson, and our guy, Kelly Bidlin, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern next week. It's time to talk a little hoops here on Prop Points. We have our senior NBA editor over at RotoWire, Alex Berutha, one of our favorite guests here on the show. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Alex, it's an interesting time in the NBA offseason. Free agency, you know, the trade markets have started to calm down. We're getting some re-signings. OKC re-upping SGA, re-upping Chet Holmgren. We expect Jalen Williams to follow suit, but I want to take a little bit of a look back at what we've seen so far in the offseason. We'll talk some summer league with you as well. That starts up in Vegas tomorrow. Who to you have been the biggest winners of the NBA offseason when you look at year-over-year improvement?
I mean, I think you really have to look at Houston. I mean, just getting Kevin Durant, massive. Because that's really what they needed, right, was a more reliable scorer. And you, Jalen Green wasn't able to be that guy against the Warriors in the playoffs. You bring in a proven veteran. And I also like their acquisition of Dorian Finney-Smith. I mean, they just have a really deep, versatile roster, which is what you need to compete in the Western Conference. And I think overall they're the winners, although there were plenty of teams that I thought made good acquisitions across this, across the board, including like the Atlanta Hawks in the East, for example.
Denver versus Houston, who would you take in a series between these two? I think Denver made some nice moves this offseason as well. We talked a little bit earlier about Jokic not pushing back contract extension talks, but I like the Cam Johnson trade, for instance, there. Who do you like better going forward as the primary challenger to the Thunder?
I think I would still say the Nuggets, but it's really close just because I trust the Nuggets more at this point. I think Jokic is so trustworthy as a star. We saw them push the Thunder to seven games, which was, I mean, I really did not expect that to happen. And I, you know, the Porter for Cam Johnson trade is interesting. There's some things like Porter is a better pure 3-point shot maker than Cam Johnson. But Cam Johnson, more versatile player. You also get Bruce Brown in there. Pick up Tim Hardaway Jr. We'll see what happens with Valanciunas. Seems like they really want him to stay, which would be nice because that's actually very big for them to have a real backup center, which they need. And so I think I would take the Nuggets right now, but I think on paper Houston has just as competitive of a roster.
Alex, we can maybe spin this into looking at the OKC win total, which sits at 62.5. Those popped up on DraftKings earlier this week. How quote unquote unbeatable is this Thunder team? Because I feel like I see more and more, you know, the way we talk about this team, it's the start of a dynasty. They're just going to run the Western Conference. They're going to run the NBA for the next 5 years. But you know, as well as I do, we've said that about a lot of teams over the last 15 or 20 years. And more often than not, that does not end up being the case, whether it be due to injuries, you know, change of circumstances, rosters cycling in and out. But when you look ahead to next season, obviously the Thunder, that I'm not saying they're not the team to beat in the Western Conference, but do you view them in a similar light to, say, how we viewed the 2017 Warriors when they added Kevin Durant? Because I saw that team as, if they're healthy, there is absolutely no way they are losing the NBA Finals.
I don't view them in quite that way. I think they should be the clear favorites to win the title again. But, I mean, again, we saw them go to seven against the Nuggets. We saw them need seven to deal with the Indiana Pacers, right? I mean, they are beatable. They have their weaknesses. Now, maybe they got the monkey off their back to some extent, right? They won the title. They got through those battles, and now they're going to be more prepared than ever. But going forward, it's not easy, especially in this new cap environment. Like, if you want to keep SGA, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren, it's possible. But the rest of your roster, you're really going to have to, like, scrap and claw and get, like, cheap free agents and draft perfectly, which – OKC and Sam Presti, they have had a history of doing, and I do trust them to do that probably more than any other team. So again, they're not at the same level as those dynastic Warriors teams, but they're pretty close, especially since I don't think we've seen the best of Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren yet. Maybe we've seen the best of SGA, but they're stuck up for a long time.
All right. So we've talked winners. Let's talk losers. Who did the worst this offseason, Alex?
That's a good question. I think it's actually hard for me to say anybody in the East lost because the conference is so terrible that I'm like, well, you'll kind of be sticking around, I guess. I think in the West, it kind of comes down to, like, I don't know if I loved the Grizzlies getting rid of Desmond Bane. I kind of have questions about, like, their long-term future. I think the Grizzlies might have a tough year. The Pelicans, maybe it just comes down to the Pelicans, honestly. I mean, trading the unprotected pick to get Derek Queen, Jeremiah Fears. I don't know what they're doing with Zion. Their team is just so directionless, and they're not good enough to compete for a title. They are not bad enough necessarily to try to get another high lottery pick. It would pretty much require Zion being injured, which certainly is a possibility. But I think they're a team that just they need to kind of pick a lane and maybe explore trading Zion. I know that's not exactly what you asked, but like I wonder where they're going. And a lot of teams around them, even in worse positions, I feel like I see the direction. You could pick on the Portland Trailblazers and say, oh, I don't like what they did with the Drew Holiday trade. Well, at least they got like three or four young guys that we kind of like. And they're staying young. They have a defensive identity, sure. I just don't know what the Pelicans are doing.
I don't think anybody knows. I don't know if the Pelicans know what they're doing, Alex. I think they are the clear loser this offseason in what will be, again, a very difficult Western Conference. You know, I think another team in the East, Alex, who people have a lot of questions about as far as the direction of the team, a team that just fired its head decision maker in Masai Ujiri, the Toronto Raptors. Everybody's down on Toronto, but I think you're looking at this win total sitting at 35.5 and seeing some opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they're going for it. So trying to win games is a pretty low, like, you're going to get, there's a baseline amount of wins you're probably going to get by trying to win in the Eastern Conference. And the fact that they won 30 games last year while tanking the end of the season, I mean, guys like Scottie Barnes, he's playing like 28 minutes a game, you know, like Emmanuel Quickley only played 33 games last season. Like, they were not healthy. They did not play that well, and they still won 30 games. And I don't necessarily love the Brandon Ingram acquisition. I'm not a big Brandon Ingram guy, but he gives your offense a certain floor that you may have not otherwise had. Same goes with RJ Barrett, you know, who's been around. But Pirtle's a quality center. Like, they just have a really good, solid top five. And again, looking at the Eastern Conference, it's hard to say they're worse, like definitively worse than a lot of other teams. Like Indiana, I think they should be better than Indiana. You can go to Chicago, Miami, whoever, who knows about Philly's health. Like, they should be just as good, if not better, than some of those teams. And 35.5 wins, they should be able to cross that with relative ease.
All right, let's finish out here with some Summer League talk, Alex. It starts up tomorrow out in Las Vegas. This is the big one, right? It's not the Utah Summer League. It's not the California Classic. This is the one we really care about. And we're being served up Cooper Flagg versus Bronny James tomorrow in the primetime slot. Now, when it comes to betting Summer League, Alex, you know as well as I do that, you know, betting on the team that has the big prospect, the number one pick, that's not always the way to go. In fact, you know, oftentimes we don't see those guys play more than two or three games. I will say a number one overall pick has not won Summer League MVP since all the way back in 2010. That was John Wall. So you can give us some picks if you like. You can give us some strategy. How do you go about betting the Las Vegas Summer League?
I think you just look at the teams that have a lot of guys on their roster with legit NBA experience that are probably not so good that they will get sent home, you know, or told not to play, like Cooper Flagg and maybe even VJ Edgecombe might even be in that category. So, like, if you're talking who's going to win the Summer League title, like, I think Utah and Toronto are there for a reason in terms of, like, the leading odds, because Utah brought, like, half their roster here. Bryce Sensabaugh, great scorer, he's there. Kyle Filipowski is there. Isaiah Collier is there. I like Walter Clayton. They need to develop Cody Williams. All these guys have, like, real NBA experience. And I don't know if they are going to get sent home or benched in the later stretches of the Summer League. And same goes for the Raptors. Jacoby Walter, John Mobo. Like, they have guys on the roster who have played NBA minutes. So that's how I'd look at it from, like, a futures perspective. And even from a game-to-game, like, the spread money line perspective, if you want to go game to game on that.
Alex Barutha, everybody, doing great work for us over at rotowire.com. You can check him out on Twitter at Barutha Alex. ProfitX is offering the best odds all baseball season long. ProfitX is a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40 plus U.S. states, the first of its kind in the U.S. You'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against the sports books. Exchanges guarantee you get the best odds on average by 10 to 20%, and you can even request your own odds. Download ProfitX today, use the code VSIN, earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. We got to head to break. Baseball picks for tonight's slate coming your way next here on Prop Point.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson here with you for about 15 more minutes, taking you up to the top of the hour. As always, make it rain coming your way next here on the network. Keith Irizarry in for Adam Schein today. We got Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard. That's coming your way at 4 p.m. Eastern Primetime with Scott Seidenberg coming up at 7. Let's talk a little baseball to finish out the show, Jeff. As we told you at the start of the show, we got two games in action. 0-0 out in Milwaukee right now between the Dodgers and the Brewers. One out in the bottom of the second. Brewers do have two on. Tyler Glasnow already approaching 40 pitches in the middle of the second inning. Blue Jays, White Sox also 0-0 in the top of the second there. Three hits on the board for the Blue Jays, but no damage quite yet for Adrian Houser. We'll keep you posted on that Milwaukee game if the Brewers are able to cash in. But Jeff, we got plenty of action coming our way tonight in the late slate. Let's start out with the Phillies and the Giants. Jesus Luzardo going up against Justin Verlander. It's been a rough go for Justin Verlander, Jeff. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, it really has been a rough go. Still looking for that first Giants win. Going up against Jesus Luzardo, who hasn't been doing so well. He's cruising earlier this season. Since then, and since May 31st, your Brewers got to him, just destroyed him in that game. He's had three disaster starts and one pretty bad start among those starts. So he's climbed like from a high ones ERA to a 4.44 ERA, including his last start against the Reds. Only went two innings on that one there. Huge walk rate on the road, too, over four walks per nine. Waivers versus right-handers. The Giants have a number of capable right-handed hitters in this one here. Helio Ramos, Matt Chapman, Willie Adames, Wilmer Flores. I think this is better hitting conditions during the day as well at Oracle Park. Typically far better during the day, 26 overall generally, but 11th during the day, according to StatCast, three-year park rolling park factors. Verlander was pretty terrible in his last start, so I really like the over in this game. Over 8.5 runs. It opened at 8. It's minus 108 there for the over. Also, I would throw in a Giants plus 108 on the money line as well. Getting plus money at home, we always like those, so that's a bonus one there. Didn't even have that one on the outline, but we're going to go do that one as well.
I will pass along that Tyler Glasnow did just walk Caleb Durbin. So bases loaded now for the Milwaukee Brewers with Jake Bowers now coming up to bat. Tyler Glasnow over 40 pitches, again, still in the bottom of the second. We've got the Rays and the Tigers tonight, Jeff. Zach Littell going up against Rhys Olson. Now you got a Littell prop for us.
I do. Littell has been rolling. You think, okay, this is great. 350 ERA, but a 107 whip. How's he doing it? He's allowed 24 homers already. That's a lot. It's a ton for the first half there. Doesn't strike anybody out. 17.3 K percentage, 9.7% swing strike rate. How's this working for him? Well, he doesn't walk anybody. 3.4% walk rate. 248 BABIP suggests he's been very lucky. But then again, BABIP is going to be a lower because guess what? Home runs are not balls in play. So the hardest hit balls he gives go over the fence. So maybe that's why his BABIP is so low. I think it's not just necessarily that he restricts good content. It just means he's been, on the balls that are actually in play, they make the play. 89.5% left on base percentage. Average is usually around 78-79%. These are all suggestions that point towards him being a little lucky. Facing a really hot Tigers offense, I think this is a pretty good spot for a regression. Will it happen tonight? We'll see. Note the start time in this one. This was supposed to be going on right now, but because there's rain in the Detroit area, they pushed it back to 5:10 Eastern time. Going up against Rhys Olson, by the way, I really like Rhys Olson. We'll see if he can go deeper into the game. Only made it 4.1 innings on 89 pitches in his first start coming off the IL. My bet here is going to be anti-Littell. It's going to go over 2.5 earned runs allowed. Minus 135 at BetMGM. That's where I found that one there. So I think there's now a line there over at DraftKings as well. So you can find your best price. If you're confident enough to go to the 3.5, you'll get a better price point, obviously, there. But I like going fading Littell today.
Got David Peterson going up against Tomo Sugano, Mets and the Orioles tonight. Mets, pretty sizable favorites on the money line. Totals up at 10 here. Is this a potential fade spot on Sugano?
It is. Sugano's on the struggle bus. He's really struggled lately. Is a guy that, we talked earlier about it's hard to get by when you don't strike anybody out. And he is rock bottom. We talked earlier about Littell not striking anybody out, 17.3%. While Sugano is at 14.4%. Swing and miss is only at 8.2%. He does not generate swing and miss. Over the last five starts, 887, a whopping 215 whip over his last five. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. The one thing that might mitigate this is the weather. This game, there's even a chance this is delayed, might not happen. Both the New York games, by the way, weather is going to be an issue. So pay attention to the rain on rain forecast on this one there. maybe you want to hold off and making a bet that might, before we get more definition closer to game time on this one here. If this does go off, though, I like the Sagano over 3.5 earned runs allowed at +110.
Let's take a look at Seattle and the New York Yankees. Got the Yankees as -156 favorites on the money line. Another game with an elevated total coming in at 9.5. This is Cam Schlittier. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Jeff, going up against Logan Evans.
Yeah, and he's making his debut, major league debut, replacing Clark Schmidt. Schmidt is going to have Tommy John surgery. He's out for the season. Schlittier was a 7th round pick in 2022. So he's done well to earn even getting to the majors, you know, 7th round, 8th round. That's kind of mid tier prospects. He's a mid 200s prospect and RotoWire's prospect list curated by James Anderson. He's going up another against a pitcher that's also a bit of a low key prospect in Logan Evans. Evans has been a little lucky so far. Also light on the strikeouts, 274 BABIP, 461 FIP, suggests that he's been a little lucky for that 296 ERA. I don't know what to expect out of like the money line in this game. I will say that the Yankees should score some runs. They broke out last night against against Logan Gilbert, but then turning around and being able to do it against the bullpen after that. So I like the over team total of 4.5. Don't love the price at -140, but I think it's a good bet that they'll get the team total over there.
If you're in the Milwaukee area, please mute your televisions for a moment. Oh, no. The Brewers did not score, Jeff, in the bottom of the second. Jake Bowers fouled out, and then Joey Ortiz striking out with the bases loaded to end that inning. So Tyler Glass now got himself in some trouble, but able to get out of it. Dodgers now back to sizable favorites on that live money line, -137. Brewers coming in at +105. We also got a run on the board in that Toronto-Chicago game. Blue Jays now leading that one 1-0. Let's take a look at one more game, Jeff. The Marlins taking on your Cincinnati Reds. Sandy Alcantara going up against Andrew Abbott. I know you're looking at this as an overspot.
I am. Andrew Abbott just made the All-Star team yesterday as an injury replacement there. Hey, he's pitching well. 215 ERA, 109 whip. The Marlins, though, Nick, are just on fire right now. You can't stop the Marlins. Nick Martinez certainly couldn't yesterday. Sandy Alcantara, you know, he can't stop himself. I worry about that a little bit too much. Abbott, by the way, too, there's significant home road split. 0.87 whip on the road, 1.3 whip at home in Great American Small Park there. More base runners. The Marlins are that type of team that can string together an inning. They don't need the big bop. They do get it every once in a while from Kyle Stowers. But, you know, they're not necessarily homer reliant. And I think against a guy like Abbott, that's important. So I think they're able to get to Abbott a little bit here on this one. I like the over 8.5. You can get that at -120 over at DraftKings. I think that's a pretty decent price.
We got a couple more parting plays for you via the good people over at GBank. Introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription, taking you all the way to October 31st. We're talking a $200 value there. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. You can head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today over at VSiN.com/GBank. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jeff, you just gave us some great plays in Major League Baseball. You got an NFL future for us for your GBank best bet.
Yep, we talked about the Seahawks earlier. That is my best bet. Talk about that a little bit more also on our training camp week next week there. Very excited about that. We'll do a lot more win totals there.
I got to get something in for the Las Vegas Summer League. It's my last chance, Jeff. I like Utah at +650. I think Toronto at 8-1 makes sense. Give me the Minnesota Timberwolves 10-1 to win the Las Vegas Summer League. Rob Dillingham, Terrence Shannon, Leonard Miller, Jalen Clark. They got enough bodies to get it done. Give me the Wolves. That's going to wrap up the Wednesday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN, but keep it right here on the network. Make it rain with Keith Irizarry coming your way next.